OMGNFW, it's the Ogre Cave Audio Report, recording on Friday, April 27th, 2007. I am Mike Sugarbaker.
And I am Alan Sugarbaker.
And I'm Steve Connie from Dr. Cox and Mr. Gary.
In Oakland. The other
in Oakland, California.
Which is always said in that tone of voice.
Actually, when I answer the phone, it's Dr. Comics and Mr. Games! And then there's a big pause while the customer tries to figure out what the heck's going on.
You have to insert Krusty the Clown's laugh.
I am not a machine!
You are talking to a real person!
If you'd like to buy a game, press 1.
But yeah, there was just a GTS.
A GTS.
Yeah. A GTS.
And Steve attended.
I was there on behest of the store that I represented, Dr. Cox and Mr. Games, and at the same time, OgreCave.com.
Right on.
Yeah, you guys tried to cover GTS, which is, what, 3.5, 4 days exhibit hall? That's how long it's open? You guys tried to cover it in, what?
5 hours. Five hours, baby. That's all we had. One day.
One day on the exhibit hall floor, and I think it's the day when they weren't open as long.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm exhausted.
So how do you attempt a ridiculous task such as that?
Well, Dr. Comics had 3 people there. We sort of broke up the number of booths that we had to check out, and each one of us sort of visited our list of booths, and we had questions that we had to ask, whether it be what's our new stuff, or where's our product, or can you guess a fax, get you to fax us an invoice or whatever. We had a whole number of different things that we were doing.
So it's not just what the typical consumer goes to and says, look, this is a
cool
new
stuff.
Shiny thing.
Yeah, no.
Or announcement of the Halo action clicks, or ooh, it's not that. It's, you're going there, what is this? Do we carry it? Or we already want to carry this, why haven't you shipped it? And all those
where's your
niggling
paperwork?
Details.
Can we get it set up an account with you?
Yeah.
This kind of stuff,
This is why it's a trade show.
It was, so it was busy already for me as a retailer. As a representative of our store, it was very, very busy. And then at the same time, flip a badge around and go and say, so, what's coming down the pipe, guys?
How are you doing?
It was a very, it made for a very long, long 5 hours and very compressed. I didn't get to see nearly as much as I wanted to. I didn't get to talk to as nearly as many people as I'd like to. But at least I was out there taking a look at stuff, trying to cover it as best as I could.
Right. Were there any publishers who really impressed you with either what they had or how they presented it?
Actually, I thought FFG is always, I've really always liked them. We really like Fantasy Flight Games stuff, and they had a pretty good display and a pretty good setup for demoing their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Rio Grande actually had a game area set aside for them, so you can drag a game all the way out to this big area filled with tables and play their games.
Yeah. Lee Valentine, who wrote a show report for us, mentioned this area where all these tables, but apparently the Gamma folks forgot to tell a lot of retailers about this ahead of time, so not a lot of people staffed for it.
Yeah, it was actually, I think Rio Grande was one of the few companies that was adequately set up to demo their stuff at those tables.
Well, that's sort of running demos and talking to retailers and possibly taking orders and such. That all implies more than one staff person.
Yes.
So all of the small companies would suffer in that sort of situation, anyone that sent one guy.
Exactly.
Such as Lee's company, Veritas Games.
Right.
Yeah. So, Steve, did you demo anything?
Did I demo? I didn't have a chance to really demo a whole lot of things.
Yeah. See, I'm wondering how big of a win having demo tables really is at a trade show.
I think it's a win if you have more than 5 hours to sit down and take a look at these things. If I had another day, I could easily have sort of scanned the hall, taken in what I really want to, kind of got an overview of things that of what I want to see.
Right.
And then spent the next couple of days, hopefully, actually sitting down with various manufacturers and taking a closer look at their individual products. That would have been an ideal situation.
No, I heard there was an after-hours lounge set up to game with the various companies and even somewhere someone posted that there was a Game with the Origins Award winners event set up after hours.
Hmm.
Probably all after you were already headed back for the airport.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so they are taking advantage of other times when people aren't occupied to get them into some demos. It's just not done in the same way as a regular con where you see a game you like, you sit down for a demo right there necessarily.
Now, right.
Sure, there's some of that as well, but maybe it doesn't work quite as easily at the trade show where you might only have one exhibitor representing a company.
Right, exactly. However, you know, I did, fortunately, I'm actually pretty experienced at playing a lot of games. It doesn't take a lot for a distributor or rather a manufacturer to, you know, tell me what their game is like. I can kind of take that in pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They can show me the basic mechanics of their game and I'll go, okay, I think I see where you're going with this. And that said, there's some pretty cool stuff that's actually coming out. So I'm pretty excited about a lot of these games that are, mm-hmm. are coming our way.
We've had Chris Hanrahan express some frustration in the past at how a lot of presenters at GTS don't seem to have anything else. Like, they can show you how their game works, but they can't give you, you know, a lot else that a retailer might want. I mean, was there anybody changing up, you know, the sell that they had at the show?
One thing that I noticed, that especially some of the larger companies, Fantasy Flight being one of them, they actually had a number of people there that basically covered various aspects of their game production, which was interesting. Sometimes it ended up me talking to the guy who designed cards. Sometimes it ended up me, you know, talking to someone about the role playing game, you know, that they're, you know, some of the role playing game material that they're producing. That can be kind of frustrating if that person happens to be tied up with someone else. You know, overall, I thought it wasn't that bad.
I've noticed, just to jump in on this, I've noticed in one of the handouts that you brought back, this one in particular regarding Order of the Stick products, you know, Giant in the Playground and Ape Games, they specifically state in the little cartoons in this thing, you know, stop waving at the retailers and such like that. This is a full-color, glossy, fold-up brochure detailing all of the Order of the Stick and Ape Games products just for GTS. This will not be retasked for Origins because it just would make sense there.
Right.
Show up at Gen Con because it would make sense there. So what retailers? Even that minimal effort is good.
Yeah, and admittedly, Ape Games is one of those booths that had minimal staff. They only have maybe a couple people hang out there.
It's a small company.
So it's actually really a really good move on their part to have this one thing, very colorful, very attractive thing on their cover that anyone who could just sort of grab off the counter in case their two salespeople happen to be tied up.
Mm-hmm.
And it really sort of...
That's essential for any con. I think if you don't have little handouts, then...
And some of them have...
Then you're only helping two people at a time, no matter what, if you have two... Guys at the booth.
I think it was, to a large part, it's still kind of a lot of the same. You know, we had people there, you know, a lot of these smaller companies especially have the designers out there pretty much demoing their games and by trying to show off how cool their games are, trying to sell retailers on, hey, this is a great game for them too.
So still not so much, this sells, this is why it sells,
right.
So on and so on, more... Great game, come play. Same approach as a regular con.
For the most part. I did see, you know, a few cases where people were trying to sell people on the ideas of their game, especially people who had games that are sort of still in production or, you know, awaiting production.
Uh-huh.
They were a little more focused on trying to tell people why they should, you know, why they should buy into the idea of their game. But for the most part, it was still more or less, come take a look at our cool game.
Okay.
Hmm. Did you see anything that you were excited about?
That I was excited about?
Yeah.
Mongoose will have Starship Troopers pre-painted in figures by the end of the year.
And, really? They're doing that on Starship Troopers?
They look really cool.
Oh, okay. Good.
I've seen people run Starship Troopers miniature games. People who have painstakingly assembled these very, in some cases, very difficult to assemble metal figures. You know, by the dozen, because you have to have a lot of bugs,
mm-hmm.
and painted them. And they look great. And when you have the whole field covered with them, it looks even better.
Mm-hmm.
And these plastic miniatures actually look pretty darn good.
That's cool. That's good news.
That was pretty exciting because now people will be able to throw, mix these in with their other figures and get even more bugs, you know.
That's kind of what stopped me from even trying that game because I knew I wouldn't be assembling them and I wouldn't be painting them anytime soon, so I just stayed away.
I actually have this set of bugs. I don't think it's even in production anymore where you have to glue them and bend the legs out and everything. I was like, oh, no, I don't have time for this. I just gave up. It's still sitting in the box, unassembled right now.
So this may actually do much, much better.
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be awesome. From Fantasy Flight Games, we really do well with the Arkham Horror board game.
Right.
The King in Yellow expansion is coming out
that's right.
in mid-June.
I read about that.
I'm pretty excited about that. I think we're going to be carrying that, definitely.
Did you see anything about their Kingdom Hearts CCG? Any announcements?
Yes, in fact, they had some announcements. And,
a little frightening.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting property. I mean, the video game is kind of insane, and yet has this really loyal following.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've actually been doing okay with the Naruto card game when we can get it.
Okay.
So
you think the same sorts of kids would go for it?
Well, the thing is, in the past, we really balked at the idea of jumping in on these anime card games. We passed on. We passed on the Full Metal Alchemist card game.
Mm-hmm.
Probably was not a bad move since it sort of died quietly. Mm-hmm. But the Naruto card game is doing pretty well. Kingdom Hearts, I don't think it has quite the widespread following that Naruto does, so I'm not sure what level.
It's not really an anime property.
Yeah, it's kind of in between anime and Disney property. It's very strange.
I mean, I think it's interesting how people are starting to mine video games for CCGs and, you know, for other games as well. We had the Halo
exactly.
Action
well,
Clicks
World
announcement.
World of Warcraft,
And World, yeah.
Leroy Jenkins
is a really good example of that.
Right.
The World of Warcraft CCG has actually kind of cooled down for us. We're not ordering as much of it. It still sells. Okay. But it's definitely cooled down for us, so you know we're sort of backing away from that slowly.
So you guys might try Kingdom Hearts.
I don't know what our level of investment will be on that. I know that we're taking a look at a few other anime related CCGs.
Okay.
I'm just shocked that that Kingdom Hearts has gotten licensed before Final Fantasy. There's no Final Fantasy tabletop products.
There's so much Final Fantasy out there too.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's
right.
so androgynous.
Maybe all the Final Fantasy fans are playing Exalted. I don't know.
No,
that's the only thing I can think
be.
Of that's in that space at all.
All I know is that this is the weekend of our sale at store, and we dragged out all the CCGs that we had sort of collecting dust in the upper gallery of our store, and we're blowing them out at huge. I mean, gigantic discount, like 10 cents a pack or something ridiculous like that. We have Duel Masters.
We're going crazy.
Pokemon. We have Deadlands card games. They have Seven Seas collectible card games. I don't know where half this stuff came from.
You have Deadlands, man.
We have freaking Xena collectible card games. That sort of falls in the what the hell were they thinking kind of category.
Dude.
Speaking of which, the 24 card game and the Stargate SG-1 announcements, I think it's... No, it's two different companies doing each of those, but Upper Deck is doing one of them.
Did you have a look at either of those?
I did not. Claudia wasn't even at the booth at the time I dropped by. I dropped off a couple cards. That's my extent of contact with Upper Deck.
But, okay.
And the other thing, actually, as a miniatures person that I'm really excited about, though I'm not sure how much I'm going to buy into this, is that Gale Force 9 is actually producing... small containers of terrain feature material. So you don't have to buy it by the 2-pound sack of ballast and try and figure out what you're going to do with all of it.
I think I've seen this.
They have small containers, and they also have a line of tools that they're producing as well, which are really nice.
There was some company out there that was selling just a like sampler pack.
Yeah, small
pack.
Yeah.
No, it was a plastic thing that had little tiny bits of all the different... terrain powders and fake leaves and all that stuff that you would need.
Right.
And I don't know that it was Gale Force 9, but I remember seeing that recently.
Well, Gale Force 9 is using these screw-together containers that actually are popular amongst, like, fly fishing people who store the materials in kind of these containers. They're actually a fairly substantial container, and you can actually connect them together into a larger unit.
Okay.
It's actually really nice. So that's pretty cool. And I actually am looking forward to also Tannhauser by FFG as well. They have a really neat sort of line of sight method of resolving combat.
What's
basically
that game about?
The premise is that World War I never ended, and people have sort of started researching the arcane and the cult. And it's basically a shoot 'em up where you have these guys running around in a haunted house, you know, blowing each other away. But
is this a miniatures game?
Yes. The miniatures are pre-painted. They basically are moved around on these colored circles, which indicate what other parts of the building can see your figure, so you can, and what determines, you know, your line of sight.
Interesting.
Really neat kind of way of resolving that without a you know, a tape measure or something like that. Very quick and easy way of resolving that.
What's it called again?
Tannhauser.
Okay.
And that's going to be released July-ish.
July-ish. Yeah. July-ish. Most things announced at GTS are sometime-ish.
Yeah. Most things announced by FFG, doubly so.
Yes. Rolls, just like the old Infiniverse Torg magazine, roll to see how true this rumor is.
Right.
Oh, you've proven it false. That's not coming up.
Sure. We were talking about Exalted and these anime-related card games. Anima RPG will be released later this year.
Ish.
They actually are on page about 228 of the translation, which leaves the last, I don't know, not even quarter. It's like a sixth or something of the book that they have left to translate.
The index.
So it's mostly source material that they're translating.
Okay.
And it's going to look exactly like the book they had there, except not in a foreign language. So the artwork will be the same, and that's actually really quite beautiful. It's one of the few non-D20 RPGs I'm actually thinking of at least getting a copy of to check it out at the store.
Okay.
All right.
So. And now, we haven't talked about kind of the elephant in the room as far as GTS time frame. Everyone in the podcasting community was going nuts over the Paizo announcement on the 19th that Dragon and Dungeon are no longer going to be done by them in a few more months.
Right.
That they'll be going on to do Pathfinder, a monthly advertising free, I think you said.
Yes, I think that's at least the goal, is that they're going to be doing this
monthly big adventure path.
Adventure module, I think, is what they're considering this. It's not really an issue of a magazine per se. It's actually a volume that they're going to be releasing on a monthly basis.
Periodical volumes of an adventure path on a new world, or multiple adventure paths. And you actually spoke with
Joshua Frost.
Joshua Frost from Paizo about this.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and we can have you take a listen to that right now.
Yes, let's go to the audio tape.
Okay, I'm talking to Joshua Frost, yes?
Yes.
Of Paizo?
Yes.
And he is going to tell us about the wonderful things that are going to happen post-Dragon and Dungeon Magazine.
So the advantage that we have as a company is that all of the geniuses that have put together Dragon and Dungeon for these last 5 years, who made the magazines great, who put what everyone's saying, Dragon in its Silver Age and Dungeon in its Golden Age, those people all still work for us. So even with Dragon and Dungeon going back to Wizards of the Coast, it doesn't impact us design-wise, because we still have all those great people.
All the artists, all the writers.
Everybody. And the outpouring of support for us has been great. The support for Pathfinder's been great. And they're supporting a really great product. So James Jacobs, who's been the editor-in-chief of Dungeon now for just over a year, is the creative director for Pathfinder. And Pathfinder is a monthly book product. It's an adventure path product. And our initial plan, this isn't set in stone, we're flexible, we listen to customer feedback, but our initial plan is that we'll do six-month adventure path arcs. So our first one's Rise of the Rune Lords. It kicks off in August and it's going to run through February. Six volumes. It takes characters up to level 15, I believe, in that adventure path. And we're not set in stone on that.
Now, you're saying that this is module to module. You said you're talking about this earlier and saying that this is going to be more of a module-driven type of campaign.
Yeah, something that James has got a really great blog going right now on the Pathfinder page. So you go to paizo.com/Pathfinder, click on blog, and he's putting up a blog post every day. And one of the things he talked about with our world that we're creating is that he wants to give it a first edition feel, but still sort of have that modern day role playing aspect to it. So James is very much an old D&D player, so he's Grognard. He's into D&D from the beginning to now, so he knows everything. Like, he talks in one of his blog posts about playing in White Plume Mountain, right? So
Oh, wow.
The guy goes back a ways, right? He got his first article in Dungeon in 1988, I think.
Wow.
So he goes back a little ways. And what he wants to do is he wants to get that module-to-module feel where the adventure paths and the modules that we're creating drive the story. And so as you're playing through Pathfinder Volume 1, that's driving the story. You don't have this big campaign world that's got all these high-level characters that's driving your story. It's everything your characters do, their interactions, and their interactions with you as a game master. That's going to drive the story forward. And that's the whole premise that James has put into this. And that's the thought process he's put into this.
Oh, fantastic.
And what he's resulted in, I think, is amazing.
So this Pathfinder, what is the price point going to be on this particular?
Pathfinder has two price points. The number one price point is our MSRP, which is $19.99.
Right.
So that's what we're going to sell it to the retailers at. They can buy it to their distributors. We're also going to release a player's guide with each Adventure Path art. And the player's guides are 16 pages. They come in 5 packs, and they're only $10.
Wow.
And so a DM or a GM can buy up a player's guide, hand them out to all their players, and they're good to go. And our first one in particular is going to cover our Pantheon of Gods, some basic local information. We're starting small. We're starting in one small region
right.
of our world. Because our world's pretty big. But we want to get people excited about one little place where this adventure path is going to take place. And then we're also doing a subscription for it, much like we did with Dragon and Dungeon. And a lot of people say, well, who's ever heard of subscribing to a book? Well, Science Fiction Book Club, lots of places out there have done book subscriptions for quite
right.
some time. And we want to see how that works. And we think, and based on the information and the data we've got so far, people are really excited about it and are converting pretty quickly to a Pathfinder subscription. And what that's going to get you every month for $14 plus shipping, because you have to, and you have a variety of shipping options, I'll get to that in a moment. But for $14 plus shipping, you get it sent directly to your house, and you get an email that says a PDF of that month's volume is waiting for you on Paizo.com. Please come download it.
So you get it for that same price, you're getting not only the print copy,
right.
but actually the digital copy as well.
That's correct.
For no extra fee then?
No, the digital copy is included free if you subscribe.
Wow.
And subscribers help us immensely because it helps us set our print run.
Right.
And that, it's hard to imagine so as a retailer, but retailers should understand that that really sets the print run that we can produce to
yes,
send out
absolutely.
To them. If we've got guaranteed sales every month, and we're still going to support the channel, we're still going to get stuff out into the hobby stores, it's helpful for us to know how many people are committed.
Our comic book store stuff turns in pre-orders all the time.
Absolutely.
This is the kind of thing that also does set the print run for main comic book manufacturers. This kind of new concept is actually a really good thing. It actually gives you the starting capital to make this thing really good and,
We're always, as a company, we're always worried about doing anything that upsets the retail chain. We're committed to making all the retailers out there successful, and we're committed to making the hobby channel survive. I mean, we put our books on Amazon, we put our books into Diamond Book Trade, they go out to Barnes & Noble and all that, and we're really excited about partnering with those people as well to sell our books. But we're all gamers, and our heart is really in those hobby game stores that we went to when we were kids, and we want to see them thrive and be successful. Now, what I mentioned about the shipping earlier with Pathfinder is a lot of folks, not a lot, but we have a fair amount, 1% or 2% every month we complain about missing issues with Dragon and Dungeon. And that's just unfortunately the nature of the USPS periodical rate. It's on demand whenever they can fit it. It's kind of ridiculous. And we've listened to our customers, and we've provided multiple shipping options with Pathfinder. So if you've got some money to spend and you're a little crazy and you want your Pathfinder the day after it hits our warehouse, we have an overnight option.
Wow.
You can get it to it the next day. And we've got everything down to a book rate, which I think takes about 10 days for it to get to you, but it's not going to get lost because it's not periodical.
Right, not periodical.
Yeah.
Right. Actually, this is interesting. This is almost sort of blurring the line between periodical and kind of your adventure module,
right.
module system. Now, are there going to be ads or what?
No. Pathfinder's a book product, not a magazine product, so
fantastic.
We don't need to sell ads to make it work. The reason Dragon and Dungeon had the price points they had was because I sold 30 pages of ads in every issue every month. And you got to the latter part of the year, and sometimes I was selling 45 pages of ads,
right.
including our house ads, and you get down to it, you've got 40-some pages of content, and the rest of it's advertising. which is great for all the advertisers, but, you know, it's not necessarily great for somebody who spent $8 and got 40 pages of content.
Oh, 40 pages of content.
So for $19.99 or for $14, for $13.99, if you subscribe, you get 96 pages of content.
Solid content.
Yeah, 96 pages. There's going to be roughly 50 pages of adventure, and that's going to, each adventure path adventure is going to be a massive adventure, nothing like you've seen in Dungeon. Well, maybe kind of like you saw with Moray Castle, where it
right.
was one whole issue.
Right.
But nothing that we ever did on a regular basis. That's going to move your characters from, say, the first one, level 1 to level 3. You know, we're going to get you to 15 levels in 6 volumes.
Wow.
So the other half, which we're calling the back matter, not really an official term, just what we're calling it in-house, the back matter is going to contain the meat of our world.
Right.
It's going to talk about the gods. It's going to talk about, you know, we'll have articles, like Sean K. Reynolds will do articles for us describing our gods. He's agreed to do that for us. We're going to have ecological discussions about the monsters that already exist. Like, I know we've got one planned for Stone Giants coming up in this new six-path arc. We've got 6 monsters in every single issue, and that's going to be where we're actually... We want to keep the flow of information coming in from the outside,
right?
And that's the first thing we've opened up for submissions. So we want people to submit monster ideas to us, and we'll go through the submissions file, pick new monsters, because we have an opportunity here with the Open Gaming License to do whatever we want.
Exactly.
And we've got a bunch of guys who've been designing Dragons and Dungeons for 5 years, and they've got all these ideas built up, and we're making these great things, you know? We can take the Chupacabra if we want and make it into our own monster.
Right.
And we did that with a Tazzle Worm, actually, in D0, the module that we're giving away for free RPG Day.
Right.
It's a real-world fictional monster, right? And we just made it into a CR2 creature that exists in D0. But there's all this back matter, and it's a lot of people will say, well, if I don't want to play in the adventure path, then I don't want to pay the $19.99 to get the book. And what they're doing then is cutting themselves off from a lot of really great articles that helps drive not only our world, but can help them play their games.
Right.
I know a lot of people subscribe to Dungeon, not necessarily for the adventures of the adventure path, but for the inspiration. They may never run a Dungeon adventure.
That's exactly my case.
Yep. Yeah. They run a homebrew that they've been running at home for 25 years, and they want inspiration because, you know, frankly, we don't all have a whole bunch of ideas, but Dungeon's got great ideas, so you can take those and work with them. So we're hoping people will see the same thing at Pathfinder, even if they're not going to use the adventure. There's a lot of stuff in there that's going to help move them forward.
And be useful for them in the long run.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. It sounds like you guys have a really solid plan here. I don't know what else to say.
Stay tuned to paizo.com/Pathfinder. We're doing daily blogs every day for the first 10 days after the announcement, and then we'll be doing weekday blogs every weekday for the remainder of Pathfinder's existence, so hopefully forever. And it's just great sneak peeks at everything the guys are working on. I know they're eager to share a lot of stuff, and we're having to rein them back and have them just share things at a time.
You want them warm, though. Let too much out of the bag just yet, not before you've really gone to full production.
Yeah, we're really, really excited about Pathfinder. We've known about Dragon and Dungeon for a little while.
So you've got time to get ready for it.
It's given us a lot of time to plan and think about what we were going to do and have stuff ready day one so the fans would know that even though Paizo has to move on because of the end of the license, that we've got something and we're going to offer something amazing for the world.
Well, I look forward to seeing that on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with that.
Great,
that sounds really good.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
It sounds like a pretty exciting product. They have the staff that was responsible for their Dungeon and Dragon publication still in house.
Right.
Same artists, the same writers. They have the hookups with the same external cover art people.
Right. Old team, new product, new project.
They've had a little while to prepare for this. This whole pulling the plug on them is not an unexpected thing.
Oh yeah, it's pretty clear that they knew about this a while back. Otherwise, there would have been like 3 more Dragon and Dungeon magazines down the road in the pipe already before they knew it. No, they've known about it for a little while.
So they're prepared.
Yeah.
They've done a really, I think they, I've taken a look at their sort of the pre-press thingy that they had there. It looks really good. I think it's going to be interesting to see how well this does, because it's not, quite frankly, going to have a lot of competition on the shelves of retailers.
Yeah, what other magazines are there out on the shelves?
Well, funny you should ask, because actually Troll Lords... Troll Lords is actually...
Troll Lord Games.
Troll Lord Games is actually expanding their magazine, which is called The Crusader.
Right.
And starting with issue 6, they're starting to expand their focus a little bit from their in-house, you know, game to some more general gaming information, and it's still going to have the Crusaders sort of focus to it, but they're going to spread out a little bit into how to run good games. They'll have adventures and things like that that are really interesting for people to maybe draw upon, even if they don't play mm-hmm. their in-house system. And starting with issue 7, they're actually also going to start including their own comic strip as well, called The Troll.
Oh, dear.
I don't know how good that's going to be.
Everyone's got a comic strip.
Yeah, I know. So we'll see how that looks. Right now they're shooting for a bi-monthly release and hopefully go to a monthly release.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they're hoping to get that onto the shelves too, because they want to, you know, provide people with
sure.
another option.
And I remember Steve mentioned that in my interview with him and Joseph Goodman from Goodman Games at ThunderCon. He did mention more aggressive plans for the Crusader, or maybe they've expanded it even further at this point.
So it should be interesting to see.
They see an opening, and they're going for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why not? It's a really good moment for them to,
sure.
to try and do this. The field's going to be literally wide open. I mean, I think we have one Dragon magazine left on our rack right now at the store. Once that's gone, there ain't going to be much more, you know?
Sure.
And then we're going to have to put something else there. So.
And why couldn't it be Crusader by...
Sure, why not? It's the price point is $350. I mean, come on.
Oh, that's not bad. What other big company stuff did you see?
Did you get a look at the Halo clicks?
I actually did not take a look. Actually, that was, I think we sent someone else to WizKids. But I did sort of swing past there. And so I can't actually remember.
In his report on it, Lee said he saw them and kind of held back any judgment, saying they were a little more monochromatic than he expected.
Oh, dear.
But pre-production models.
Yeah, could be.
I think it was somebody actually in our comments back in the day who said, wow, what's the piece list for this thing going to be? Like, you know, red Master Chief, blue Master Chief, green Master Chief, dark blue Master Chief.
The lightish red Master Chief. Yeah. That's a red versus blue reference.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I do have to say that we got the Hellboy set in pretty recently. It actually looks really cool.
Okay, what about the Star Wars constructible minis, also from WizKids? Did you get a chance to see those at all? Or step on one, or anything like that?
What I've seen of it looks pretty interesting. I don't know if it's my thing, to be honest with you.
I can get behind the styrene-punched games somewhat. It depends upon how fiddly they are,
yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I've had problems in the past with some of these punch things snapping and breaking.
Actually, I think, Mike, you've gotten into the styrene games a little bit more than me in some respects.
I probably own more pirate ships than you do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm still all about the pirate ship.
I got a couple of the new mega packs that are just out.
Mega packs?
Yes.
Yeah, they've got nice big sea dragons.
For Ocean's Edge?
Yes.
Ocean's Edge, yes, that's what it is. We got those mega packs in. It basically contains, I believe, 2 sets in one pack.
Yeah.
They also have tins.
It's 2 packs in one, and then it's actually a larger styrene card on which they can do a larger model. I have a couple of nice sea dragons perched on my desk right now, glowering at me.
Ready to pounce.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're nice enough, but I understand there's only 6 of the large cards in the set.
Hmm. Right.
So, I mean, as far as a nice deal for, you know, having enough in one purchase for 2 people to play, I think that's definitely a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And something the game has always kind of lacked.
Well, it's intermittently had it, but not at this price point.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And spinning off of WizKids, Lee mentions Red Juggernaut. Is that on your route at all?
No, that was definitely not on my route, unfortunately.
It may have just been, like, pre-production artwork at this point.
It sounds like Red Juggernaut is doing a lot of the kind of thing that WizKids is doing in board games, you know, which they've done 2 of so far.
Right.
And Red Juggernaut has announced, I guess, 2 for the next, before the end of the year.
3 or 4, actually, if you go to their website.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just, you know, Mansuba. I gotta give the love to that for obvious reasons.
Yes, it's so close to your online nickname.
Yes. No, it is my true name.
That's your grown-up
name. Grown-up
That's
name.
Right.
Grown-up name.
Your manhood name.
Those who have met me on the battlefield.
We salute you.
Refer to me as Mansuba.
Mansuba.
But yeah.
As long as it's not the bit. Okay.
I didn't say which battlefield.
Oh. Love is a battlefield.
Yeah, it still says
yeah. Let's move on.
All right, what else you got?
I talked to Luke Crane, who was sort of sitting in front of the Indie Press Revolution booth.
Oh, I didn't even know that they had a booth.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
they did.
Okay, I assumed that Luke was just there on his own.
He was sort of sitting there next to Pro Fantasy Software, was sort of sharing the table, you know, sharing the table with him.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's kind of like the Brazil office, you know, the office in Brazil where they have like the table and the what kind, you know, thing down the middle.
No. There's lots of odd partnerships at shows like this.
That's very strange, but it's kind of cool because it's pretty neat. But he was talking about how Paul Tsegi and Nathan Pauletta were going to have a booth at Gen Con this year. They're calling it the Ashcan Front.
Well, you sat down and spoke with him.
Yeah, right? I sat down and spoke.
Oh, we have tape.
Yes.
We have tape.
Yes.
Marvelous.
It's very noisy tape, but yes, we have tape.
All
and
right.
If you don't like all the noise, then you should have shown up at GTS yourself.
Yes.
That's
so we have some of your talk. Maybe not the whole thing, but we'll see how much we can put in with you and Luke Crane.
Yes.
I'm talking to Luke Crane of Burning Wheel. He is representing Indie Press Revolution.
Yes. I'm representing Indie Press Revolution here
at Gamma Trade Show.
Yes.
2007.
2007, indeed.
And we were talking a little bit earlier about some new things that you guys are trying to accomplish, or actually some of your cohorts.
Indeed.
We're trying to accomplish here in the independent role-playing gaming market.
Yeah. So Indie Press Revolution represents a lot of self-published role-playing games, and they're typically very high quality. These are both, you know, labors of love, but the production values on them are remarkably high.
Yes, I agree.
There's a lot of attention to detail, a lot of devotion in these games, and they're remarkable for that. As I said, I said remarkable twice there. But anyway, but we notice a trend though that as the kind of fever takes hold, and more people want to produce these types of games, we're starting to lose a little bit in quality. Games are coming out not quite 100% playtested or unedited, you know, or just where they needed one more pass through the ringer before they were, you know, before they clicked.
For the regular prime time, basically.
Right. I mean, there's such a pressure to have your game out for Gen Con, ready to sell and pretty and bam, that, you know, it seems like some people are deciding to go to make that step too early.
Right. They tend to cut corners for the sake of getting it out on time rather than, you know, making sure that's a full-fledged game and ready to go.
Right. And, I mean, right now it seems to be, a minority of people, but it's enough of a... We've seen enough of this happening that it's a growing concern for some of the old guard, so to speak. All the really good games that have survived survived over a number of years and, you know, have kind of become buzzwords have gone through a process of ashcanning or prototyping. Sorcerer was prototyped as just a Word document. Inspectors was an HTML page. Shadow Yesterday is available for free online. Just to cite three examples where, you know, these games were available in one format and playtested over a number of years, and then they were put into a shiny cool book format.
Right.
You're kidding me.
I'm not believing this. Yes. We're gonna pause here. I'm trying to pick this up.
Let's move over
to another location. Okay, we're back again talking with Luke Crane after that strange the whole
noise.
Yes. So
the games that were very successful or have proven themselves over years, most of them were prototyped or ashcan for a period of time. Even Burning Wheel, my own game, didn't go from concept to publication. There were many, many iterations that, you know, I mocked up and handed out to, you know, groups of friends over the years. So we see this process as really beneficial to the entire creative process and to the commercial process as well.
Right.
So Paul Chiggy and Matt Snyder, Paul Chiggy is the author of My Life with Master, and Matt Snyder is the author of Dust Devils and Nine Worlds. And Paul Chiggy did Bacchanal too. I mean, My Life with Master is so overwhelming that
right.
it eclipses all in its path. Those two guys this year decided to put together an ash canning booth at Gen Con, where they're encouraging designers to come out with their games that they feel like they're almost done and they're a little stuck and they're a little unsure, like maybe I should just publish it or maybe not. So they're saying, hey, come to Gen Con with that idea. Print it up in a basic, handout format. Don't worry about art, don't worry about any of that. Come to our booth, sit down with just a random passerby, play test your game, get feedback from them, to all-star game designers,
right.
But also get feedback from all of Gen Con, and really get a good hard look at your game and at its processes. It's an excellent opportunity.
Right.
It's really, really cool. And so this is their first year out, and they're kind of freaking out. Like I was just talking to them this weekend, and they're worried that no one's going to come, no one's going to sign up and whatnot. But even if it's just those two guys with ash cans for their new games, it'll still be freaking cool.
Right.
But I suspect that they're going to get people to sign on.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Forge booth hasn't opened up their sign-ups yet. Ron hasn't started taking sign-ups
right.
for the Forge booth yet. So once that happens, we'll see, who's going to be at Gen Con with what. And then I think they're going to try to start cherry-picking people, saying, hey, this is a really cool idea, but I don't think, you're quite 100% ready to
right.
publish at Gen Con. Why don't you come over with us, and we'll help you out.
Right.
It does take a certain amount of humility to say, hey, my game's not quite ready. I want to workshop it. And the problem, too, is that the current community cycle for the small press games or the Forge-related games and whatnot is to gun for Gen Con. We do
right.
very, very well at Gen Con. Our booth is a madhouse at Gen Con.
Yes, it is. I've been there.
And, it's a lot of fun, and we make a lot of money, but it's important to the old guard, such as myself, to make sure that we're kind of self-policing
right.
and that we're as a community releasing top-notch games,
right.
and we're innovating, but we're also thinking about quality and about what our fans are getting with this game.
Yeah, making sure that the level of quality is stays at kind of an acceptable level, so that
right.
because one bad game kind of affects the industry
as
a whole. It can drag the industry down.
Right.
So,
there's always a shaking out process. Like there. Once you hit Gen Con, the good games, or at least the very interesting games will rise to the top and people will buy them. And then the games that are, unprofessional or incomplete or whatever will sink to the bottom. But we've also had weird years, too, where that's not the case. We've had really awesome games just completely go unnoticed. But what we're trying to do now, though, what they're trying to do now with this is create a little more breathing room. So that people can say, people can go into the process with open eyes, and then come back to another convention later down the line. They can hit Dragon Con even like a week later, Dragon Con, or hit Essen if they're from Europe. I know we have some Europeans that come over, or some of the New Jersey cons like DexCon or DreamNation
right.
winter, or any of the local cons, or even Icon in Long Island, which is huge. Or Origins, like any of those can stand as a good release point for
right.
For a new game that has been workshopped at Gen Con. So we're hoping to kind of shift the cycle, so because your game will always sell well at Gen Con, but there's just a fever to release it there and,
right.
And get that attention. The appeal that we're trying to express is that that you're creating an instant fan base for your game,
right?
Right. You're creating people who now have this huge buy-in. They helped playtest it. They helped, innovate something.
And
right?
for no other reason than just having them be aware of that your game is out there,
right?
That your ideas are out there,
right? Right. Absolutely. And hopefully, they will have helped. They will have participated in the process somehow,
right?
And they'll want to come back and see what the final product is.
So, excellent. That sounds like a really exciting and kind of different way of kind of looking at the whole design process, especially when you consider that some of the bigger companies, they have large pools of people to draw upon to do their testing. It's no different than what, you know, what a lot of these companies do. It's just that in this case, you're kind of having to draw on the help of the people around you and fellow gamers to make a product better. Maybe in a way it might be a better way, because you have people that really do bring unique points of view and different, you know, aspects of gaming to the table to help make something much more successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely an experiment, but I think it has a lot of merit. I think Paul and Matt are on the right track, unequivocally on the right track. I know they're going to sort out any of the hiccups and
details.
Yeah, this year. But not every game designer has a pool, huge pool of playtesters.
Exactly. They don't always necessarily have a huge, even a group of friends. The usual gamers may or may not be interested in playing something brand new that they've written.
Yeah.
So
I mean, even if it's not even the only way, we're presenting it as
an
awesome way, and a way where you're going to get. It's going to be like a lightning rod of feedback for the product.
Excellent. Well, is there anything new for yourself? Is there anything else coming up for you in the future?
I'm going to have to plug myself. But Brainwheel headquarters crew is hard at work. We've got two things coming out this year, two of our secret projects in the works.
Secret.
You know, our projects are always secret. We'll hopefully have one for you by Gen Con and one soon after.
Excellent. Well, good luck. Thank you very much for talking to us about this, because this is
my pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.
It's like the monographs from Chaos and the Cthulhu monographs, testing out an idea, seeing what the waters are like for it, maybe getting some feedback.
Right.
Yeah.
And if something does phenomenally well, then my God, we better publish this thing.
In this case, it's sort of like they're part of their self-policing thing. They mm-hmm. really they've noticed a trend that a lot of the role-playing games that are being printed independently are often forced through by Gen Con, and some of them they're just not quite there. They're almost half games or 3/4 games.
Well, mm-hmm. this is actually a huge controversy on StoryGames.com right now, and a few other places that the Ashcan Front has touched off. There was a big talk about it at Forge Midwest, the little mini-con gathering of indie designers. There's a lot of concern about last year's Gen Con crop at the Forge booth, and the fact that there is a Gen Con crop amongst the indie RPG community.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ashcan Front is one way of addressing it that I'm pretty excited about personally.
Do you think it's bad to have a deadline, artificial or not, a deadline coming up saying, okay, get your game out by this time or your sales are going to suffer?
I think it is if the games suffer for it.
Okay, if they get it out there
and
it's not done.
Yeah, I mean, I picked up a couple of things at Gen Con last year that, I'm glad that I picked them up, but...
Uh-huh.
As game products, they aren't really complete.
Right.
I could see giving more time because more time is needed. Get an extension, test the waters, not fully commit all of your financial resources just yet.
Well, what's cool about this is it sort of serves two purposes. One, it lets the designer know what some of the weaknesses are of his or her game. And two, it sort of brings the awareness up of the game. I mean, by getting it out there and having some people play it, these people are going to know that, that at least you're up to something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's cool. It's sort of pre-publicity.
Yeah, well, there's that, and there's the whole fact that, a big part of the reason this is happening is that outside playtesting is really hard to get.
Yes.
And, if you cast the net wide, then you can perhaps find, the people who are part of your target audience and find playtesters there, as opposed to simply struggling to find them amongst, people who are indie game design aficionados and have their choice of things to playtest.
Right.
So it's a different approach.
If you're not a big company and have your own pool of people to run through things, this is a pretty good option.
Definitely. Of course, the other aspect of the Ashcan Front that I don't think we've talked about on the show is that the Forge booth for the last several years has been just the one big magnet for indie RPG design or story game design or however you want to put it. And this year they're doing something very different. A lot of people who have been at the Forge booth for a long time are getting kicked out the nest, and they're being required to go get a booth of their own and make room for new people.
Get their own table. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be very interesting.
That's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
So that was very cool that you got to sit down with Luke for a bit. He's been on the site actually in video form before, the infamous 3 days of gaming.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So it's always cool to talk to him. He's a very dynamic personality, and it's always really interesting to hear what he has to say.
Definitely.
So those were the two sound bites I really wanted. Those are the two people that I really wanted to talk to, was actually Luke and actually someone at Paizo to see what was going on. So at the very least.
Yeah, at Paizo, what the hell is going on here?
So at the very least, you know, after I sort of ran through the, sort of jogged or trotted through the whole exhibition floor, I came back to these two guys and shoved a mic in their face.
Okay.
Hey.
What else did you see on your route?
Let's see. I stopped by the Margaret Weiss booth. And apparently the Battlestar Galactica RPG Quick Start will be available at the end of May. And this is not quite the full-blown, you know, manual.
Okay.
But Jamie Chambers is writing this, and it looks pretty good.
Right.
Sort of like this Quick Start, real thin volume that's sort of going to get people started on the whole Battlestar Galactica role-playing game idea.
Margaret Weiss Productions had one of the other big announcements that really flew around the net from the show. The fact that the Dragonlance license is no longer going to be with them.
Yeah.
After the end of the year, they're going to release a few more products.
Not renewed. That's correct.
It's going back to WotC.
They said that this is not going to necessarily affect them hugely, you know, as far as their product line.
Right. They've got other things going on.
However, emotionally, I think this is going to hurt a lot more because this was something that they were really invested in.
Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman, they invented it pretty much. They made it work from the novels.
Yeah, exactly. They took a languishing property and
She restarted
kind of
it again.
Restarted it and really brought it around, which it's really sad. It's kind of a, you know.
Yeah.
And they've also announced that they're launching a whole new intellectual property that is a little bit science fiction-y, but basically all about dragons.
Yeah, dragon ships of the something, I forget the exact name, but
yeah.
And Tracy Hickman will be joining in on some of the fiction to flesh out the world, so it sounds very much like, you know, they want to do something Dragonlance-ish, but they won't be able to exactly,
right.
So they're going to invent something similar.
Right.
It could be really good, who knows?
Yeah, it could be. They're both certainly capable of producing something that's going to really grab people and be really good.
We'll see.
So we'll see, exactly. Yeah, that was something, you know, after talking to you about it, you said, go and check them out, see what they have to say about it.
Yeah.
Even though everyone knows about it, you know.
Just go get it from the horse's mouth. And
I said, yeah, it's true.
It's true. And
we're sad.
Yeah. What can you do?
What can you do? Exactly. So I think as far as really the high points, I think those were really some of the major bullet points for me.
Okay.
Those are really, that was a lot of cool stuff out there.
I want to ask about, did we talk about attendance already?
I don't think so.
No, we didn't.
In fact,
let's talk about a few of the things that were
kind
of not so cool
first,
about the convention.
First, let me ask about attendance. How did it look to you? You and I went a couple of years back at the Orleans.
Which was amazing, because actually the exhibition floor was quite large and full. In fact, it spilled up into the balconies where they had all these sort of second-tier you know, game producers.
It filled the entire floor of that hockey arena that they were building.
So we're saying that the exhibition space has gone down?
Actually, the exhibition space was, I don't know, I'd say probably roughly the same size.
Okay. Was it full?
It was pretty full.
Okay.
However, the number of retailers that I saw wasn't nearly the amount, that number that we saw, even on the first day, because we went the first day at the Orleans, and already people were, like, piling in.
Right, chomping at the bit to get in there.
This was more like trickling in.
Oh.
On Monday, when we signed in. And this is the first day that, you know, registration was taken.
And then Tuesday,
Yeah, let me just say, I'll just say that I had no trouble spending all the time I needed to talk to anyone I wanted to talk to.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's kind of what we heard from Lee, from his report as well, and I spoke with Aldo Ghiazzi, Impressions Advertising and Marketing, and he said that he had heard the headcount at the WizKids and Watsi retailer presentations were about 350 retailers.
Wow.
That's not so good.
No,
I mean,
it's
not awful. It's not, dare I say it, it's not Games Expo. But it's not going to kill the organization or anything, but it's not good.
Right.
And maybe some of that was because people trying Games Expo instead.
Right.
But a lot of people did both.
Right, right, right.
I don't know if they just weathered the storm in some shanty town outside of Vegas and then came back for this one. Or what?
One of those crappy hotels at the edge of town.
Well, speaking of things that are a little bit sad, we've got this note here from Lee Valentine in his write-up that, you know, he did some seminars, and he made a note of a seminar led up by the editor of Comics and Games Retailer, and it was a marketing seminar.
James Mishler.
Yeah, James Mishler, and it was supposed to be a seminar targeted at publishers, but apparently publishers were busy manning their booths. And
they,
some retailers showed up.
Generally, don't hold the seminars at the same time. So,
well, no.
No, generally at GTS they don't hold the seminars at the same time that the show floor is open because they know everyone's going to want to be at the show floor.
Oh, okay. That's
so usually they don't.
That's actually pretty smart. Okay.
Yeah.
but yeah, what Lee wrote here is that James was very free about letting people ask questions and dialogue because he had a mix of publishers and retailers. And it was the first time in all my time dealing with the gaming industry that publishers and retailers had a forum to tell each other about what they needed from each other in terms of product information, demo materials, etc. This is the first time?
That's sad. That's
that's a little bit depressing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't say anything about anyone in particular.
No, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That it's taken that long for Lee to encounter a situation where he felt that give and take was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done a lot of grousing about GTS.
Yeah.
And I think people are a little numbed to it, but I really want to highlight this because this is really this is a warning sign for the industry. You know, this is really a red flag saying there is something wrong that we can fix.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we got to cover before we hit currently playing real fast?
Well, I wanted to ask about the facilities.
Yeah.
Because it was moved to the Bally Hotel and Casino, right?
It wasn't. The facilities weren't bad. However, it seemed like they really didn't plan for any media. The press room was located within the exhibition hall.
Oh, say what?
Yes. You couldn't get to it unless you went through the exhibition hall, which means the press couldn't get to it until the exhibition hall opened.
Oh, so if you wanted to say, I don't know, post something about the show, from the computer that they supposedly provide in the press room, you couldn't because the exhibit hall was closed at the point that you were going to do it. Nice.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
Okay.
And registration was horrendous. That was an ordeal. How hard can this be?
The registration logistics that are at various shows rather nightmarish. It depends. From year to year and show to show, it can be really great one year and really awful the next.
Yeah.
Gen Con has had an ongoing struggle trying to straighten theirs out, and they've been seeming to get better and better each year lately.
Slowly. Yeah. Slowly.
But who knows what will happen next year.
Okay, so I believe that pretty much concludes what we had to say.
Does that conclude the GTS? Was GTS successful? Was it worth going to?
It was definitely worth going to. Even for the 5 hours I was there, we talked to people. We got a lot of business straightened out. Yeah, I'd say it was pretty good. You know.
Okay.
We got a lot. At the retail, we got a lot of work done. So, you know, we just wish we could have been there for another day. That's all.
Yeah,
that would have made life a lot easier
and
for all.
Having a press room that was accessible after show hours would have been nice also for the press side of things.
So, but all in all, it wasn't bad.
All right. Cool. Now, I have to give a couple of shout-outs here.
All right.
before we get into currently playing. First and foremost, Lee Valentine.
Yes.
Veritas Games Company. Lee went above and beyond the Call of Duty to give us his account of things seen and heard at the show. And we have to say, as a deputized ogre out in the field, he did an outstanding job, and we salute you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lee.
Yeah, I couldn't do it myself.
If you haven't read through his report yet, it's linked on the site. It's in the show notes, or it will be.
Yes.
And by all means, have a look through, see what Lee saw at the show. Yes.
Yes, it's a great write-up.
Okay, beyond Lee, we also have to give a shout-out to Mike Stackpole, who's a longtime evangelical crusader for the game industry, who took it upon himself this year to go to the show and pass out little binders of podcast-related business cards,
yeah,
gaming podcast business cards.
He's an evangelist for gaming podcasts in particular. Yeah.
Well, right now, but for many, many years, he's been an outspoken proponent of the game industry.
Yes, he has.
And this year in particular, he took on gaming podcasts as his crusade, and he represented Ogre Cave Audio Report quite admirably, and we're already hearing from folks out there, hey, nice show, just heard about you. So thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, if people have stumbled in from Mike's efforts, then hello, and you get what you deserve. Ha!
Ha! Take that.
Well, podcast to the face.
Oh, that's going to leave a mark.
Yeah. The way I like it. Steve, what are you playing lately?
We played a whole bunch of games in between the last time I was on the show and now.
What are the highlights?
One of the funnier games that we played was Figaro. This is by, I believe, Rio Grande.
Okay.
Some of the subsidiaries of Rio Grande. Fascinating game. It's about a card game that you basically, you're playing playing these cards on each other. It's kind of one of those FU games where you kind of just, you know, bashing the other guy or the other guys to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically playing a jester in the king's court, and the guy who annoys the king the least is the guy who will win. And basically you score by picking up these long tiles, these road tiles that represent how far out of town they're going to kick you. the funniest part of this game is one of the higher scoring cards. The higher cards you can slap down on somebody is the jester painting a picture of the king. And on the painting is a picture of Reiner Nietzsche, the designer of the game. And the king is totally steamed. Fascinating game. It's not really a big-brained type game. It's really pretty easy. But it's amusing just because you just basically trash the other guy.
Right on. Right on.
We played a game called Who's the Ass? It's basically kind of an inverted version of a popular drinking game. That's also kind of a screw the other guy kind of game as well. It's a pretty good variation. It's kind of, you know, turned sideways.
Would this be the same popular drinking card game that is the basis for The Great Dalmoody?
Yes, I believe it is the same drinking game.
Okay, it shall remain nameless.
It begins with sort of the, you know, a word for donkey and hole.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Right.
Gee, so, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes, we've been very coy.
We finally figured out how to play Mimic. Mimic is this card game that features these beautifully colored animals, you know, giraffes, zebras, this sort of thing. The idea is to make sets of three, sets of four, the same color. And it's actually a tough game because the instructions were they weren't very well written. So we actually ended up having to play it over and over again. When we finally figured it out, it's actually a really good game. But apparently he has an expansion coming out for it, and hopefully the rules will be better for it.
Okay.
The Mimic expansion will be out hopefully by Christmas-ish. It'll include the solitaire version and a four-player version. This game is designed to be played with, oddly enough, three people initially, but by in its basic form. and team play two against two. He's still shopping around for a manufacturer, so he hasn't set a price point on it, but he's trying to project a $10 mark, but we'll see how that turns out.
Okay.
Like I said, hopefully it'll be better in this one.
All right. A little sneak preview of that, evidently.
Yeah. Something I forgot to mention. Let's see. We've played, there's just a ton of games. But those are a few of them that kind of stand out in my mind right now.
Okay.
So I'll jump in with something else maybe a little later. But
okay.
But let's continue on here. Let's see what Alan's playing.
All right. I don't want to get too deep into this particular subject because I kind of like to dive into it next time maybe when we have more time.
Okay.
Our weekly D&D game got to a head, the weekly campaign, where the group had cast silence to attack some folks within a fortress without alerting everyone else. And the one evil fellow in the group took advantage of that to attack, oddly enough, Steve's character.
Yes.
And
I love that. Thank
because
you.
It was, oh, you're welcome. Because it was an all silent game, I was already planning to, just as an interesting side function, have everyone put everything their character wants to do in note form, and then I would respond in note form what happens, so that none of them would know what the other characters were planning to do until they actually saw it.
I thought it was merely that players could not talk in character to each other out loud.
That too.
Okay, I thought that was as far as you were going.
No, everything that they wanted to do, if they wanted to send a signal to so-and-so, then I might approve them trying to send the signal, but I warned everybody, don't try to send little hand signals to each other that have no meaning in a fantasy world.
Okay, yeah.
Don't send the meaning, the signal for eyes over here, you know, that Marines use or whatever. You're not soldier trained. You don't know that symbol.
Actually, Kai was soldier.
Well, Kai was.
But the rest weren't.
but nobody else in the group could do that sort of thing. It made for a very interesting dynamic. And that was something I decided on doing before realizing, oh my goodness, the evil guy is going to love this. So it wasn't that I set this up specifically so the evil guy could pounce on everyone unimpeded and pass tons of notes without arousing any suspicion, but that's how it worked out.
Yeah. All right, well, there's two interesting things about this that we should talk about next time. One is that every year around your birthday, you run a game that's interesting and really in some way. And this was one of those.
Indeed. Whether it means one of the players stands up and suddenly runs the game for me or whatever.
Yeah, that's another good one we should talk about. Or did we talk about that one time?
I think we may have last year.
Yeah. And the second thing is that you indeed had an evil character in your game that the other players didn't know about.
And one of the players didn't like the result.
Yeah.
One out of five.
All right.
So I consider that a success, but still, it's something worth talking about next time.
Definitely.
In more detail.
Definitely.
Because there's various issues that come up. But the guy who was directly attacked, Steve's character, he enjoyed it. So
I'm cool with it.
So I consider it successful.
All right.
I'm cool with it.
All right. Did you play anything else?
I did not play much of anything else. I think I probably squeezed in some Guitar Hero here and there,
right,
as I'm wont to do lately. And I am currently kind of going through the rules to Space Hulk, because I'm planning to play it tomorrow.
Interesting.
And I want to refresh my memory.
All right.
And also flipping through my brand new shiny copy of Tolus.
Oh, that's something that we played, actually. We played your favorite, actually, Mike and mine now, Thunder Road.
Thunder Road!
We tried it out.
That's right. We did actually do it after the last show.
Nice.
We got in a quick game of Thunder Road.
Nice.
Yes, indeed.
I had a great game of Thunder Road just last night. We tried to play a little bit more by the actual printed rules, which made the game take a lot longer.
With the repairs and such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool game.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's a good time. We also played Universalis, which is kind of becoming our standby game.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Cool.
Yeah, we can more or less get a satisfying story out of it collaboratively in about an hour, which is tough to beat, you know.
Nice.
And we played a nice sort of post-apocalyptic fairy tale thing. Also, both of the role-playing games that we played last night, they were both very short, of course, because we played two. And both of them were set right in our locale, right around here in Portland. We actually used Portland as the setting.
Yeah, that's always fun to use real-world places that everyone's familiar with.
Yeah. There's a couple of upcoming indie games that actually have that in the rules, that you must do that. But
really?
That's another topic. Anyway, I think that's kind of interesting. But, yeah, we played that. We played Inspectors, and I'm not going to spell it out again, but it's the weird spelling one.
Right.
Memento Mori Productions.
Yeah, we played it a little more by the rules this time. And just had a blast. There's just a lot of really quality stuff in that game. Such that you can have a game, you know, you can have real structure and still have a lot of improv craziness.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it went a lot better this time. Also, we had a game of Carcassonne, which is only notable because two of us had not played it before and because I won.
Ooh, I love Carcassonne.
Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
That's still one of my favorites.
I feel a little guilty because, you know, the newbies didn't understand that farming was as crucial as it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Tough luck.
Too bad.
Yeah.
This is the way you learn.
A harsh life lesson applied by Mike.
Yeah, I feel dirty. Yeah, but that's all I got. Anything else?
I think that's
pretty much good.
All right. Do we have any beverages to report on?
Cherry Coke. I have a sweet tea, a sweet leaf sweet tea.
The original.
The original.
Okay, that's a valid choice.
And yourself?
I'm drinking a Belgian ale brewed by Avery Brewing in Colorado.
Nice.
It's called the Collaboration Not Litigation Ale. Apparently because they and another brewery had Belgian ales that went by the same name.
Uh-huh.
And they could have sued each other, but instead they made a blend of the two.
Ah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
At GTS, I had the worst gin and tonic that I had since my cousin's wedding. Tastes like, I don't know, turpentine.
Right.
The worst gin
and
tonic.
And I had a mojito that nearly killed me. Darn near killed me.
That's not
before
a good
before the convention started.
Not a good No wonder you're having trouble covering the show. Man.
I had this midday headache that just wouldn't go away. It's amazing.
Worst gin and tonic I ever had was at my bachelor party.
Oh yeah. I can see.
With love and intoxication, this has been the Ogre Cave Audio Report. Thank you for listening. I am Mike Sugarbaker.
And I am Alan Sugarbaker.
And Steve Connie of Dr. Cox and Mr. Games in Oakland, California.
We'll be back with Chris next week. Join us next time. Thank you.
Bye-bye.